Back we go to the bin Laden story and how this all started. Keep in mind, 10 years the U.S. and other countries have been going after this guy. So how did it all happen, and when did the good intelligence start? Well, when one of bin Laden's most trusted aides picked up the phone last year, that's when we got, the U.S. got a good lead. He unknowingly, obviously, led the pursuers to the doorstep of his boss, Osama bin Laden. Now, that particular phone call was recounted to the AP and ABC News by a U.S. official, and that's what ended the years-long search for that personal courier. And that was the break in a worldwide manhunt. They knew that the only way they're going to get him is via a courier. That courier, Abu Ahmed al-Kuwaiti, led U.S. intelligence to that walled compound, thank you very much, Hoffman, compound, in northeast Pakistan, where, of course, we know the story about the Navy SEALs. Now, the final few minutes of that firefight, which in the end killed, it was the end of the firefight. Last I heard is that bin Laden was actually the last one to get shot, were the culmination of years of intelligence work. Now, the CIA team hunting bin Laden always knew that his vulnerability were going to be his couriers. He was way too smart to let his foot soldiers, even his senior commanders, know where his hideout was. I mean, that's how insulated he was, and that's one of the reasons, if not the main reason, he was able to keep out of sight for all of these years. So if he wanted to get any messages out, someone had to carry them out, a la courier. And obviously that someone, it had to be someone that bin Laden trusted with his life. So, in a secret CIA prison in Eastern Europe, years ago, doesn't sound like the beginning of a television show? In a secret CIA prison in Eastern Europe, years ago, Al-Qaeda's number three, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, considered one of the masterminds of 9/11, gave the authorities the nicknames of several of these couriers. Just nicknames. What the hell do you do with a nickname? And their nicknames was always the Beard. Abu Ahmed the Beard al-Kuwaiti. They're all called the Beard for obvious reasons. Or the Weasel. Or the Nose. And so what? You know, what does it do to know what a nickname was? As a matter of fact, those nicknames were among thousands of leads the CIA was pursuing independently. And when you have this many leads and you're following them up, it's almost impossible. After, we always get the story after the fact, they had the information. Okay, thank you. Well, we don't talk about them having the information, and it's one of 10,000 bits of information, and you don't know which one is good and which one isn't good. Ah, they didn't put the dots together. They're idiots. So, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed gives the nicknames of several of these couriers. One man becomes of particular interest for the agency when another detainee, Abu Faraj al-Libi, tells the interrogators that when he was promoted to succeed Mohammed as the operational leader, he received word through a courier. Because again, that's the only way Osama bin Laden ever talked to anybody. And the CIA official said only bin Laden would have given al-Libi the promotion. He's the only one that would have ever done it. And if they could find that particular courier, they then would find bin Laden. And that intelligence that was gleaned, I mean, little tiny bits. We had a man on this morning, Matthew Alexander, who was involved in 300 of these interrogations personally and oversaw 1,000 of them, says you get little tiny bits of information. And you get little tiny bits of information from another detainee that corroborates this story. And out of that, you get information and leads that may turn out. And years were involved. And of course, the CIA was nailed for not getting it. Mary Martin, Marty Martin, excuse me, a retired CIA officer for years who led the hunt for bin Laden, told the AP, we got beat up for this, and that is never putting the dots together or unable to or letting him go for 10 years. But all the efforts we had led to this great day. So, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, did he reveal the names while being subjected to waterboarding? No, he didn't. Not only are we getting that information, but that was corroborated by Matthew Alexander, who did the interrogations. And the information that he did give them was months later under standard interrogation, just sitting down and somehow connecting with these detainees. And it was, again, the nicknames that were coming out. It looked like this was solid stuff. So they were able to identify the courier, but they didn't know where he was. The CIA didn't know where he was hiding. And since there were no phones or computers that bin Laden used, the NSA, National Security Agency, which is even more secret than the CIA, and this is a zillion-dollar agency that has those satellites and literally listens to every cell phone conversation on the planet virtually at all times. And out of that, there are super secret high-end programs that start picking up bits and pieces of information. They hear certain words that then are followed up. Bombings, for example, or pseudonyms that they know lead to other people. I mean, it's extraordinary intelligence that they have, and it takes supercomputers, and it's on a level that very few of us understand, particularly me, because I'm so savvy when it comes to computers. So they didn't know where he was hiding, and the NSA couldn't help at all. When we come back, let me tell you about the slip that started all this. As usual, it's a mistake made by someone that cracks the case. And since there were no cell phone conversations, he wouldn't do it, and no telephone, no landlines. It all had to be done by couriers that delivered messages to the leadership of Al-Qaeda, who didn't even know where Osama bin Laden was. Even the very senior leadership didn't know. I mean, that's how careful he was. The only people that knew where he was were these couriers who he trusted with his life. So it broke in the middle of last year because that courier that was named by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, nicknames they had, he had a telephone conversation with someone who was actually being monitored by U.S. intelligence, according to an American official. And he was located somewhere away from bin Laden's hideout when he had that discussion, but it was enough for intelligence to try and did locate him and start watching him. And in August of 2010, last August, the courier led authorities, unknowingly, of course, to this compound in northeast Pakistan, the town of Abbottabad, where Al-Libi, this courier, once lived. And there's his house that this courier was delivering messages. And they looked at it, and there were walls as high as 18 feet, and they were topped with concertina wire. Now, the intelligence officials had known about this house for years, but bin Laden wouldn't be living in a house like this out in the open without armed security guards all over the place. Nobody patrolled the compound. Nobody came in or went. And here's when they started getting really suspicious once the courier was going to this house. It was just a house as far as they were concerned. No telephone, no internet lines running in or out. And so the CIA believes that bin Laden is now hiding in plain sight in a place built to go unnoticed. Not particularly unnoticed, because the house was five times bigger than anything else in the neighborhood. But bin Laden never traveled. Nobody could get into the place without passing through two security gates. and there was no way to be sure. But the suspicion was that this could be where bin Laden lived. And the U.S. decided at that point, we're not sharing this information with anybody, even our counterterrorism allies, Britain, Canada, Australia. And there was no chance they were going to share this information with Pakistan. Because even though the government of the United States, the administration and the CIA and the top officials are ever going to admit that the Pakistani military were protecting bin Laden on his side because of the political considerations in announcing that fact or suspecting. Everybody knows that. All of us know that. I mean, there's no other logical explanation. So by mid-February, CIA is convinced that some high-value target was hiding in the compound. They could not say with certainty it was bin Laden, but they started putting the pieces together and say it just makes sense. They brought the information to the president, who wanted to take action. The president's top counterterrorism advisor yesterday, John Brennan, said they were confident, the CIA, their confidence was growing. This was different. This intelligence was different than all others. The compound is different than anything we've seen before. And the president said, let's move in the direction to take action. Now, the options were limited. First of all, this is a residential neighborhood. This is a sovereign country. And we're not letting them know we're doing this. One of the options is ordering an airstrike and, of course, just leveling this place. But that becomes a huge diplomatic problem. And obliterating the compound, even assuming you kill bin Laden, how do you confirm it? Because he's in a zillion pieces. And it was important to confirm that he was killed. That was as important as killing him in terms of this particular case. Brennan said the president had to evaluate the strength of that information and then made what I believe was one of the most gutsiest calls of any president in recent memory, which I think is a crock, by the way. I think any president with this kind of information would have gone for it. Certainly President Bush. Certainly Bill Clinton with this kind of information. The only one that I think would not have gone forward was Jimmy Carter. Although, remember, he sent the helicopters to rescue the hostages. And they knew there were going to be casualties taken. So maybe even Jimmy Carter would have done it. So it wasn't one of the gutsiest calls. Based on this information that the president had, they knew. By the way, they didn't know with certainty it was bin Laden until he was killed. They thought it was probably him, and the information was better and better and better that it was him, but I don't believe they knew with 100% accuracy that was him. So, of course, Obama decides that it's going to be the Navy's elite SEAL Team 6 that was going to carry out a surgical raid, which I believe was not only one of his options. My guess is it was probably suggested as the best option. This is our take, Mr. President, the CIA says, but obviously it's your call. So talking about that elite SEAL Team 6, more details on that and the Navy SEALs who conducted it. Today I'm recording an interview, which will play tomorrow, we'll be talking to a man who was a member of SEAL Team 6. That is going to be interesting stuff. Now back we go to the killing of bin Laden and how it came together and who did it and how they did it. So the CIA is analyzing for years and they get a break and it all comes to this compound. And it is such a way, the way it was built, the way it's handled, the no internet, no phone lines, that it not only was it a high target, high value target, but you know what? It's got to be bin Laden. It really makes no sense. Are we sure? No. But you know what? It's getting more and more certain. So they bring the news to the president about this compound. They know the bad guys are living there. And initially, back in March, the president authorizes the plan to bomb the compound using B-2 stealth planes carrying 2,000-pound bombs. But as they're looking at this and the president is reading the analysis, has to take into account that under those circumstances, the compound is going to be reduced to rubble. And okay, we're not going to do that because of the risk of civilian casualties. And this is important, that once this place was leveled and blown to pieces, if it is bin Laden in there, he gets blown to pieces too. And now, how do you prove that it was him? So for those two reasons, he says, no, we're not going to do it. And he orders in the SEALs. SEAL Team 6. And I'm going to talk to one of those today, and we're going to play the interview tomorrow, a former member of SEAL Team 6. And because they knew this was probably going to be where bin Laden was, they practiced. The SEAL team practice at a place called Camp Alpha, which is a portion of Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. They actually built a replica of this compound, and they practiced and practiced. Now, if it weren't for this, quote, high-value target, probably bin Laden, it would have been a routine mission for this actually mythological SEAL Team 6, which officially doesn't exist. Officially called the Naval Special Warfare Development Group, DEVGRU. They always come up with acronyms. And DEVGRU is part of the Joint Special Operations Command. Those are the folks that, for example, took out that team of Somali pirates to rescue the merchant marine captain. Remember, snipers were on the deck of the ship, and they just blew these guys' heads off when they both popped up. Their heads pop up out of this little boat, out of the tender, the rescue boat that the captain was on. And as soon as their heads came up, goodbye heads. And so because this raid was going to be so special, they practiced and practiced on this replica. Trial runs were held in early April. It was Friday morning, according to sources, that Obama authorized the raid. And the operation was scheduled for Saturday night. Almost no moonlight, cloudy weather over Islamabad, and that pushes it back to Sunday. And that's the reports we're getting. And from Ghazi Air Base in Pakistan, modified Black Hawk helicopters made their way to Abbottabad, where this compound was. And they flew very low, treetop. So Pakistani radar wouldn't get them. The lower you are, the less radar can see you. And aboard those Black Hawk helicopters were the Navy SEALs. They fly across the border from Afghanistan, and in they go along the treetops. Tactical signals, intelligence collectors, navigators, and of course the SEALs themselves. They sweep in. There's a firefight. According to some sources, they order bin Laden to surrender. And when he refused, shot him twice, once in the chest and once in the head, apparently through his left eye. That's the information that we got. The other information, and here it is a little mixed, a little contradictory. Other information we're getting from, again, high, quote, high-level sources, is they never intended to have him surrender. It was a kill mission from minute one. The entry, the firefight, the extraction of his body took 40 minutes, 38 minutes actually. 22 people were killed or captured. The code name for the mission was Jackpot. Geronimo was the code name for successful capture or kill. Now officially, it was a kill or capture mission. That's what we're getting. Because the U.S. doesn't kill unarmed people trying to surrender. Yeah, my ass, when it's Osama bin Laden. Also, two U.S. officials said, we knew that whoever was behind the walls had no intention of surrendering, although some people did. But certainly not Obama. I mean, excuse me, certainly not bin Laden. And Obama and the CIA and the White House staff were monitoring the situation in real time. Now, did you ever see, I think it was Patriot Games, where the president Harrison Ford, is watching in real time the attack on a base, on a terrorist base. That's what happened here. Now, we don't know whether it was a live satellite feed or it was video carried by the SEALs as the storming of the compound took place, but they're watching it actually happen. It's compound, I understand. So, fact after fiction. And there's a picture out there of these folks, of everybody in that room. You got Hillary Clinton, you have the president, you have, I think it was Mullins, who's also there. And, of course, because of satellite monitoring, they now knew they'd likely find bin Laden and his family on the second and third floors of one of the buildings. They knew where they were probably going to find him. So first the SEALs secure the rest of the property, and then they go into the building, and then they proceed up the stairs to where bin Laden, they think, is hiding. Now, according to John Brennan, head of Homeland Security, in the firefight, bin Laden used a woman as a human shield. Now we get the information that that didn't happen. And, of course, the SEALs killed bin Laden. When we come back, I'll tell you what happened then. And this is all good stuff. All good stuff. Back we go to the story of the SEALs. And we were talking about the actual incursion. You know, they flew in with helicopters, treetop level, firefight, came into the compound. They found bin Laden where they knew he was going to be on the second or third floor in the bedroom. Did you see the videos, by the way? The only video that was released of that bloody room and blood all over the place. The information we're getting is that was the room that bin Laden was in, and that's probably his blood on those. Did you notice the Persian carpets on the floor? They've called Zero Res, and I don't know what they call it, but that's the only company that'd be able to take out that blood, as far as I'm concerned. So, using the call sign for visual identification, one of the soldiers communicated Geronimo, and that meant that bin Laden had been killed or captured. I'd love to get that audio and hear the excitement in his voice when he said Geronimo. Wow. So, they immediately confirmed that bin Laden was dead, although his head wasn't particularly in decent shape. His the body was immediately identifiable. Photo analysis by the CIA confirmed it. There was a woman believed to be his wife who confirmed it. He matched the physical descriptions, and the big issue is bin Laden is 6'4". I mean, there just aren't that many people that are 6'4" and that lanky with their heads on or not. And then the DNA testing identified him with 99.9% certainty. Now, quick word about that. And the conspiracy theorists say, you see, it's not 100%. Well, DNA testing is never 100% because it really doesn't say this is the man or woman. What it says or how it works, it excludes everybody else. So what the actual analysis says is it is with a 99.9% certainty that everybody else in the world is not bin Laden and doesn't say that's him. Because of the way DNA works. I mean, we do that all the time at the Center for Surrogate Parenting. If you need a surrogate mother, you call 1-800-SURROGATE. We occasionally do DNA testing to prove to these idiot fathers that that is their kid. Not too many, but occasionally we get morons. So, the other thing that U.S. forces found is documents and hard drives and DVDs, a treasure trove of information. And hundreds of analysts are now working on that. They don't even know how good this stuff is. But they immediately formed a task force to deal with it. And then the body. Immediately flown to the USS Carl Vinson in the Arabian Seas and aboard a U.S. warship. The officials conducted a traditional Islamic burial. And again, we're being accused of, oh, what political correctness and all that crap. You know what? It makes political sense. Because already half the Arab world is pissed off at us. And we try to give a traditional burial to appease them. And it just shows that we are somewhat gracious. He's dead. We killed him. Now what do we do with the body? What, do we cut up the pieces, put it in Lucite and sell it off as souvenirs? Bin Laden's body was washed traditionally and placed in a white sheet. By the way, they probably used one of those fire hoses. You know that? No, they didn't. And then he was placed in a weighted bag. And after religious remarks by a military officer and, from what we understand, a Muslim chaplain, off he went over the edge and was given this burial at sea. And that becomes, of course, hugely controversial because you have imams all over the place saying this was not a burial according to the Quran, because the only way you can bury at sea is if the body is killed at sea and you're aboard a ship. You can't deliver a body from the ground where he was killed, because traditional Quranic law, and we're talking about Sharia law, same as Jewish law, by the way, is into the ground within 24 hours. Goodbye. Well, a couple of reasons why they didn't bury him anywhere near the ground. Number one, afraid that his body or his grave, if it ever became known, would be a shrine for terrorists. And you tell me which country wants that one. And for what I understand, they contacted, the U.S. contacted the family of bin Laden in Saudi Arabia to see if they wanted the body. Now, that's not confirmed. That's just reports we're getting. And they said, no thanks. You deal with it. And so the only obvious choice, which had to be made almost immediately, because again, then you go past the 24-hour rule, and then the mullahs go ape on that one. Burial at sea, which seems to be the best alternative. And, of course, that becomes controversial. But everything becomes controversial. Now, did we really kill him? No, of course not. Did we really bury him at sea? Of course not. It's all a hoax. Everything's a hoax. The USS Carl Vinson is a hoax. That ship doesn't exist. It's actually a Chinese warship. We're masquerading as a U.S. warship. You wait till the bloggers. Well, it's already started.
A gentleman who we've had on the show before, who has a book out called Osama bin Laden. His name is Michael Scheuer. Michael, I keep on mispronouncing your name. It's
Scheuer, sir.
Scheuer. You know, I actually knew that. but I just wanted to make sure you knew the name. Now, Michael has a book out entitled Osama bin Laden. I mean, big deal, you know? So what? Well, the difference is Michael was head chief of the CIA bin Laden unit from 1996 to 1999 and has stayed through 2004 as a terrorism expert. So, Michael, you got some credentials here, having studied this man and head of the CIA unit. So, let us start with the question that certainly comes to mind immediately. When this came down, the killing of Osama bin Laden under these circumstances, tell me what went through your mind. Was there any surprise, or you thought this is the way it would have happened?
I was surprised that we ever got him, sir. I thought that we had so few troops and people in Afghanistan that we would never be able to devote enough resources to it. I was delighted that he was dead. I was not surprised, really, that he was living a fairly sedentary life. Mr. Bush and until Sunday, Mr. Obama had been giving us giving the American people kind of the Hollywood version that he was running from rock to rock and cave to cave. But if he was moving around like any fugitive, we would have got him much sooner than we did. I was surprised a bit that there weren't more bodyguards to engage the SEALs. It seems to me he must have been very comfortable where he was.
Well, 6 years.
Well, that's what they say this morning. We'll have to see if that turns out to be the case. But however long he was there, he felt very safe.
Hey, you know, what you just said begs an interesting question, and that is, both the Bush administration and the Obama administration has portrayed a picture of him moving from cave to cave and location to location. And are you saying that based on what the CIA knew, or at least surmised, they knew that was not the case and, in fact, were giving us a line?
Well, I don't know how to answer that, sir. I left in late 2004 when I resigned from the agency. The White House has the ability to say what they want to say. Anybody with a little bit of common sense, and certainly someone who had followed Bin Laden for a while, knew that he tended to like places where he could live without moving around a lot. For example, I ran operations against him from late 95 until the middle of 99, and for almost that whole period he lived in the same compound. A compound that was not as modern as the one in Abbottabad where he was killed, but a significant structure. So, I don't know what the real answer is. I'm pretty sure that there were people in the agency and in the intelligence community generally who really doubted that he was running around like a chicken without his head.
And was that the general consensus when you wrote up your reports as chief of the Bin Laden unit for the CIA? Man, I'm assuming that those reports went straight to the president. Or at least went very, very high up. Was the position of the CIA at that time that Bin Laden was living in a single location fairly comfortably?
You're talking about during my tenure?
Yeah, from your tenure.
Oh, yes, we were watching him, sir. We could watch him every day. He'd leave in the morning and go to Kandahar City, talk to his folks.
Wait a minute,
and then come back at night.
You were watching him do that?
Yeah. If we had the same authorities that the president, this president, gave to the SEALs, if Mr. Clinton had given the agency the same authorities to kill, Bin Laden would have been dead probably in May or June of 1998.
Now, obviously, he was not considered as dangerous until
9/11,
right?
He had interest six times by then.
He had what?
He had attacked U.S. interests on six occasions by May 1998, and 2 months later, he destroyed two of our embassies in Africa. So the media might not have covered it, but it was very clear to the president that this guy was a very big threat.
So obviously, you're not a big fan of the way the Clinton administration handled going after.
Sir, I'm not a fan of anyone who doesn't think that it's his priority job to protect Americans.
Yeah. And in your opinion, President Bush and President Obama are of a different ilk.
Well, I don't think until the past couple months that either one was much different than Mr. Clinton. They talked a good game, especially Mr. Bush, but with very little results.
Hey, one of the things you said is we didn't have the resources or were willing to give the resources to go after Bin Laden up to this point. But sending in a commando unit, a SEAL unit, isn't a lot of resources.
Well, no, but you had to locate him first. And what I was referring to, sir, is we have 100,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. The ratio between support and shooters, combat soldiers, is 1-3. So on any given day, we have 35,000, say, combat troops to protect and defend our interests in a place that's bigger than Texas with the highest mountains on Earth. And those soldiers have to keep Karzai in power. They're supposed to rebuild the economy, build a democracy, defeat the Taliban, build a communications and transportation infrastructure from scratch.
So you're saying we don't have nearly the resources in Afghanistan that we need?
No, sir. The whole Rumsfeld concept of a light footprint really ensured our ultimate defeat in Afghanistan.
All right, but let me go back to Bin Laden again. I'm assuming, and maybe I'm assuming wrong, that other than the intelligence that we devote to this and the sending out of the SEALs and its support, this is not thousands of troops, and this is not zillions of dollars, or am I wrong?
No, that's right. I think the development of the program over the course of the last, well, since August when the president said it started, probably was in the millions of dollars developing the opportunity, but really, really much less expensive than a occupation of a foreign country.
All right. So I'm assuming now you are a fan of President Obama.
No, I'm not, sir. I don't think he has any will to win the war in Afghanistan.
Okay.
I just think he's another politician.
Okay. Michael Schur. Osama bin Laden is the book. Also wrote Imperial Hubris. And incidentally, nothing has changed in terms of what you write about or your analysis other than the guy is dead now.